Hello, and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 28. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hey.
How you doing, Riley?
I'm good. It's rainy Saturday, and I'm feeling like got my blanket and my jammies because I can't be arsed to get dressed on a holiday weekend. And I'm ready to talk about Mass Effect.
Yes, our topic today is going to be Mass Effect Andromeda, which I'm sure comes as a surprise to no one that we're talking about Mass Effect again. And with us to talk about Mass Effect is returning guest Sufi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Yay.
Thank you for having me again and for such a very specific topic that has, you know, so much to do with my interests.
Yes, yes. We knew that it was a pretty easy decision when it came to guests for this episode.
Especially because, like, Zufi messaged me and she's like...
I invited myself. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, if you need anybody to talk about Andromeda, here I am.
I did, like, the biggest podcast faux pas.
It works when you're, like, a returning guest, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for a first-timer, that would be kind of a little bold, but...
Maybe an overreach.
Maybe. Zufi, do you want to... talk about yourself a little bit? I know you've been on, but in case any new listeners are here.
Sure. So I am formerly of the Justice Points podcast, and I also did my own podcast for a little while called Pop Culture Coven. At the moment, I am just trying to move across the country and do a whole bunch of other stuff while playing video games. So most of the very deep insights that you can find me putting out there would be on Twitter these days.
All right. So we start the show with just talking about what we've been up to. So Zufi, what have you been playing and watching and reading?
So, of course, I've been playing a lot of Mass Effect Andromeda, but we'll get to that. Mm-hmm. I've also been playing, just in the last couple of days, a decent amount of Overwatch again because I wanted to try the new patch that came out with the new PvE encounter, which has been really, really fun. I think probably my favorite PvE encounter that they've designed for Overwatch so far. Mm-hmm. I was... kind of a little skeptical at the beginning when they started doing those because it didn't really seem like it could be as much fun as the PvP side of the game. Mm-hmm. But this one in particular, I think, has been really well done and, like, has a lot of replay value.
Yeah. Have you done, like, both modes where you can pick other characters?
Yes. Oh. Just last night, a couple of friends and I did the regular mode where you have to play as the four set characters, mm-hmm. and we rotated because there's an achievement that you get if you play through it once on each of the four characters available. Yeah. So that was pretty fun, getting to do it as each of the different people. But also, I've been having a lot of fun experimenting with different characters on that map because they interact with the robots in ways that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Huh. Like, for example, I didn't think Sombra would really be that great, except that when she hacks any of those bots, even just like the normal ones that don't really have special abilities, they just freeze in place. Oh. So, and then when you use her Q, her ultimate, which hacks everything, like that obviously is great if you have a big wave of robots because everything just stands still and waits for somebody else to take them out.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun just kind of seeing what works, basically, on that encounter.
Nice. I've played the one with the set characters once and then the other mode once, and it's pretty fun. I definitely think it's the best sort of special event game type that they've had so far.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So then I've been watching basically two things this week. I've been trying to make the most of my HBO Go subscription, which I got for Westworld, and then I was like, I should watch some other things too. Mm-hmm. So I went all the way through Veep, which was pretty fun. Some jokes I wasn't super thrilled about, but on the whole, it was a pretty fun watch through, and I guess the next season of that is starting soon. But I don't know. I feel like I've got to wait for a whole season to be done before I can commit to that again. And then I've been watching, which Pam, I saw you've been watching as well, 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. And I'm only about halfway through that now, but it's much more compelling than I expected it to be. I almost kind of passed it up.
Yeah, I wasn't super thrilled with the first few episodes, but it kind of gets better as it goes, but also like harder to watch as it goes.
Oh, for sure.
I'm finding like the first couple of episodes, I was like, oh, this is just, you know, high school stuff. But then it starts getting like really like someone is punching you in the stomach as you're watching it. Just for anyone who doesn't know, it's the new Netflix series. I think it's based on a book, and it's about a high school girl who kills herself, and she makes this set of tapes listing the 13 reasons and the 13 people that have sort of contributed to her making this decision. And so it's her friend Clay who's listening through one tape per episode as the show goes on.
Yikes.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
it's good. My main thing right now is more of a I guess like the process or how it's made. It's just like Clay is listening to these tapes and, you know, freaks out about one thing but doesn't know the whole story. And, you know, I guess they have to do that to sustain a 13 episode series. But at the same time, I'm just like, just sit down and listen to all the tapes and get the whole story.
Like, yeah. And I think it's been interesting to watch too, because it's a real I can't imagine writing this show because it's pieced together, not necessarily chronologically. So even when you're hearing bits and pieces of what happened to Hannah, is the name of the girl who leaves these tapes behind, you don't hear like the full story in order from, you know, the time she arrived at this high school, which, you know, makes sense in terms of, I don't think when we tell stories, we necessarily do them chronologically, but it makes for really interesting viewing because you kind of know, like, all right, I have one piece of the puzzle from later on, but I'm still missing a bunch of things that tell me how we got there. And like I said, I can't imagine writing this. I feel like it would be a really unique challenge.
Yeah, I think they did a good job doing that in not in chronological order.
And then I've had a fair amount of time to read lately because I've had a couple of flights. So I got all the way through a book called We Believe the Children, which is a nonfiction study of a period in the mid to late 80s when there were a lot of accusations of child abuse and satanic ritual abuse, specifically at child care centers. And that was, I mean, obviously a difficult read given the subject material, as it sounds like it would be, but also really fascinating and, you know, sort of more rooted in psychology and specifically the history of psychology that led up to what was going on at that time, and a lot of interesting stuff about the way that child witnesses or child victims are interviewed by the police or by people working for the police. So it was, you know, definitely a tough read and kind of a dry read in places, but really interesting. And then I just started reading a book called Maplecroft, which is the first in a series. I don't remember how many there are. And it's basically about Lizzie Borden when she's older, dealing with a whole bunch of Cthulhu shit. it's the best way I can summarize it. So it's been really interesting so far. It's got a super like cool atmospheric vibe going on where one of my friends who recommended it to me described it as reading it and sort of reading the words and getting the tone of what it's doing is actually way more frightening than anything that actually happens in the book. And I think that's a pretty good assessment of it.
Yeah.
So it's very creepy and fun.
That sounds cool. All right. Riley, what have you been up to?
I also played a little bit of Overwatch. Not enough. Like, I played, I don't know, I think one round of the PvE stuff. as my boy Torbjorn, so that was good. And a little bit of the, like, quick play, and I noticed that they, I haven't read, like, any of the patch notes, and I didn't realize that they, like, changed Lucio, like, the range of his, like, songs, and they have, like, a circle around them now to, like, show you when you're out of them and when you're not out of them, so I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, I've heard some complaints about that, particularly from, Brother Dom.
Yeah.
Been on here before.
Yeah, I saw a bit of that. So that actually prompted me to look and see, like, what was going on with that just in game. So I was, like, constantly making sure I was in the healing circle or in the speed circle, which I guess is, like, good if your teammates are aware that they need to be in the circle. However, if they're not, then, like, you know, then you have people spamming, like, I need heals. Like, where are you, Lucia? Why aren't you healing me? And you're like, it's because you're not near me, dude.
I do like being able to see the radius on it. Yeah. Now, but yeah, having it decreased is certainly taking some getting used to. But
yeah, he has to be so much closer now. And I used to play him, like, hiding behind things, so I didn't have to go anywhere. but I mean, I'm looking forward to, like, playing more now that I'm free from Mass Effect. So yeah, I want to, like, get back into playing that more, and, like, I got a new video card, and so the game looks better.
Good.
And, like, I love all of the new skins that they added, like, all the characters look so good.
And of course there's D.Va's new highlight intro.
I love it so much. Somebody got a play of the game the other night, and it was as D.Va, and I was like, oh man, because I had a really good play of that game too. And then their highlight intro popped up, and I was like, I'm not even mad. I love it. Oh, yeah, that's so good. I can't believe they added that. I'm so happy they did. She just needs, like, an emote now to go with it.
A selfie emote. Yeah.
And then, I mean, like, aside from Overwatch, of course, been playing Mass Effect Andromeda, and we'll talk about that later. I had some recommendations for movies to watch on Netflix. Sarah, Pam and I, our friend, who's been on the show before, she recommended a Korean horror movie called The Wailing to me. And it was, like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's, like, some parts, like, possession-related and then, like, satanic cult-related and also, like, a little bit of, like, zombie stuff in there, too. Like, very briefly, but it's there. It was really fucked up, but it took a long time for it to get there. Like, the movie, I think, was 2.5 hours long. And the first hour was kind of, like, like, politicking almost between the police officers and, like the weird shit that's been going on in the village that they're in. The last, like, half of the movie, like, really picked up, and there's, like, ghosts and, like, demons and, like, shaman rituals and, like, all this other crazy stuff in there. So it was pretty good. The whole time I was just like, it's hard for a horror movie especially to be reading the subtitles and trying to keep track of what's going on, like, on the screen, I found.
And also you can't look away.
Correct.
Like, hide your eyes.
Yes. Yeah, you can't, because you gotta keep reading so you don't know what, like, so you don't miss what's going on. That one was pretty good. And then I watched Train to Busan, which I know, Pam, you also watched.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the best, like, horror movie that had zombies in it that I have ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, I thought that movie was extremely well done. And I cried like a baby for the last half, like, 45 minutes of the movie. So, yeah.
I only cried like a baby at the very, like, maybe last 7 minutes.
It was so good. And like the even the characterizations were so well done. Like all the main character, the father, he's like an asshole at the beginning, and then like you kind of see his character morph throughout from being like a like gotta save myself, only look out for myself and my daughter, and then he kind of like morphs and like his character kind of goes a completely different direction like mm-hmm. throughout the whole show. And there's like relatable side characters, and the side characters are awesome. There's a pregnant woman who's really cool. Like the little girl was even really good. There's like kids on a baseball team. And like this whole like the horror part of the movie kind of takes place on the KTX, the high speed train that runs between Seoul and Busan. And like having all those like zombie characters like be on the train with you and like in such a confined space, I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I just loved it. I thought it was such a good movie.
Yeah, I thought they used the contained space very well. And there was one point where they get to a station and it sort of opens up. And I was like, oh, I kind of like it when they're on the train. But then they get back on the train. So it's okay.
Really quickly.
Yeah. The only thing I wasn't crazy about was like the bad guy, because I felt like it was like, look, this is the bad guy. Watch this bad thing he does. Oh no, look at this other bad thing. He's so bad.
Yeah, he was a little, like it was a little over the top being like, this is the bad guy of the movie.
But it was generally really, really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I would absolutely watch it again too. Which can't be said for a lot of like horror movies now, especially.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, like if you think you've had enough of zombie movies, please watch Train to Busan, because I think you'll change your mind for this one movie. And then I recommended a Korean show called Strong Woman Dobong Soon. 2 weeks ago without having watched it. So now I have watched like three quarters of it. And it's also really good. It's like this young woman who the power of being super strong is passed down from like woman to woman, like grandmother to mother to daughter, like over and over because of some... There's like a story at the beginning where... it's like one of the women did something to anger a god and then was cursed with this power of like super strength. It's like passed down through the family in generations. And the girl that has it now, Dobong Soon, she basically like she doesn't use her powers much, especially in the beginning. She literally just wants to be a video game designer and make video games. And so she's trying to get into this company called Ainsoft, which I think is a playoff of NCSoft because it's so big there. She ends up becoming the CEO's bodyguard because he finds out that she's super strong. It's a really good, like, there's good comedy in it, and there's a subplot that involves, the guy that she really likes, who doesn't like her back. He's like a police officer, and so he's investigating like a series of kidnappings of women in her neighborhood. And so she's also trying to investigate it, but without letting him know that she's doing it, and also super strong because he doesn't know. And then the CEO is involved because he wants her to be safe. And then there's a love triangle between the three of them. And then there's like a love triangle between her twin and this other girl who's dating the police officer. It's like, it's complicated, but it's like, it's so funny. And the only problem that I had with it was that there was a like a temporary weird subplot where there were rumors that the CEO love interest might be gay. And so that got like kind of pushed in a weird direction where Dobong Soon's mother was like, doesn't matter if he's gay, you can still sleep with him and make him your husband. And I was like, okay. Yeah, but like it for that subject matter of the show, it was not there for very long, but it comes up every once in a while. And I'm like, you don't, like, it doesn't even need to be there. And I'm not sure why they added it. But other than that, I think it's a pretty funny show. And the actors and the lead actress are so cute. And I just love them so much. But that's all I've been up to, is watching more Korean stuff and then playing some Overwatch.
So, yeah. And you've also been streaming.
Oh, yeah. Three days a week plus Saturdays, I've been starting to stream myself learning Korean, and it's going pretty well.
Oh, that's cool.
It's good to have an actual schedule, I find, keeping up with it. Otherwise, I don't think I would do it as well, because I started before Andromeda came out and was kind of just doing it whenever I had time, but now I sit down for an hour and a half on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and actually, go through, four lessons, and then do review on my own time, and then have, a big review stream on Saturdays. And, yeah, it's been pretty good so far. I'm almost through level one, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so in the last couple of weeks, I have also played some Overwatch. I wasn't going to mention it since we've talked about it twice already, but the Lucio changes reminded me that there was a change to competitive as well, so that there's going to be less draws now. So on point capture maps, it will show you how much of the way around you collected the point, and then it'll come down to that. So whoever has more of it gets the point. You don't actually have to capture it.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
That reminds me, too, of a quick PSA, something that's been broken since the patch on Tuesday of this week. May is totally borked.
Oh, is she?
Her slow doesn't work. So she is almost completely ineffective right now, and it still hasn't been fixed as of the time we're recording. So just a heads up for anybody who tends to play May.
Well, that is very helpful. That sucks. Other than Overwatch and Mass Effect, obviously, I played through Thomas Was Alone, which is a game that came out a few years ago, and it always got really good reviews, but every time I looked at a video or something, I was kind of turned off, because the whole game is just these little rectangles, different shaped rectangles, sort of walking around doing puzzle platforming things, and there's a story, and they have names and apparently have personalities and all that, but graphically it's just a bunch of rectangles. So I was always I don't know if I really want to play that. But I listened to an episode of the Bonus Barrel podcast where they talked about it, and it sort of convinced me to play, and it was pretty good. It was actually a really, really solid platformer, because each character and each shape has their own abilities. One can do a double jump, and one acts as a trampoline that other squares can jump off of, and one can float in the water and carry other characters across the water. So it was pretty fun. It was a nice little short one. All the puzzles only took a minute or two per level to finish. And then I also played a game called Hard West, which was recommended on the Drop the Feed podcast, which I guested on a few weeks ago. And it's a turn-based strategy game, kind of like XCOM, except it's in the Wild West, but also a supernatural version of the Wild West. So there are demons, and a lot of the time you're fighting. Well, the game is narrated by Death. And it's what I really like about it is that it's scenario based. So I think there's 8 different scenarios, and in each one you play a different set of characters with a different set of goals, and all of them sort of interlock in some way, but you're always doing something different. So for example, in the first scenario you play this family, And in the second scenario, you like play someone who's after the family. So it's pretty neat. It's not the most, I guess it's not super polished in terms of how the combat actually works, but I really liked it. It had some role-playing elements. So in between the combat scenarios, you have to do things like one of them is mining for gold, one of them is raising money to take part in a big poker game as a clairvoyant. So it was pretty cool. I think I've done 6 of the scenarios so far.
Shoot.
And then I watched Train to Busan, as we said, and 13 Reasons Why. I also watched the movie The Witch, because it was the focus of the last episode, or I guess 2 episodes ago, of Let's Watch 2 Movies. Have either of you seen that?
No.
No.
No? Okay. It's a horror movie, and it's about this family of Puritans, so it's like in New England in the 1600s, I guess, and they get thrown out of their community because the father is just like too pious. He doesn't think the rest of the community is pious enough, and they're like, you have too much pride, you guys have to leave. So they end up going and living all on their own, sort of like outside a big forest. And right at the beginning of the movie, the new baby in the family gets taken. And the whole thing is about a fear of witches. And it was really well made, and it was really well shot. And it was filmed in Ontario, like way up north of Algonquin. So it was a really good location that communicated like just how alone and remote the family was. But I wasn't a huge fan of it, just because I don't really care about Puritans. So like all they talked about was God, and I wasn't interested in that. And then the witches, I mean, because there is actually a witch in it, it was just, you know, there were bad witches who murdered babies and and molested children. Like, they weren't cool witches. So it was all right. Like, it was a really well-made film. I just, it wasn't sort of my type of horror film.
Mm-hmm.
I started watching a TV series called Power, and it's about a man whose nickname is Ghost and sort of his double life. And he runs a giant drug empire in New York City, but he had recently opened a nightclub to launder money, and now he sort of likes how it's going, and he's thinking maybe he can take his business, make his business legitimate and get out of the drug trade. So he's got a bit of a stringer bell thing going on. But his partner in the drug trade and his wife are like, nah, I like this drug money. You should keep doing that. So it's sort of about this double life he's leading in that way. And then also in a second way, because he starts an affair with his high school sweetheart. And she works for the DEA, and she's actually after him. She just doesn't know it yet. So there's all sorts of like dramatic irony in it. And there's also a lot of very attractive people having lots of sex. So it's pretty good so far. I think I'm near the end of the first season. So it's a lot of fun. Very, very kind of soapy, and there's lots going on.
Neat.
All right. And I think that's it. So we can move on to our main topic for today, which is Mass Effect Andromeda.
Dun, 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 dun.
So Mass Effect Andromeda is a new part of the Mass Effect series. So it's not like a continuation of the trilogy. It takes place kind of alongside it, but also 600 years in the future. and I guess the main story is that a bunch of different sort of colony ships for each of the different species from the Milky Way galaxy go 600 years away to the Andromeda galaxy to try to find sort of a new home there. And then, of course, some things go wrong.
As they are wont to do in Mass Effect.
Yes. Yes. So, what was everyone's first impressions of the game? I know critically it got some criticism sort of right off the bat based on the little demo that was offered and the press embargo.
Yeah. I bought it early and I signed up for that Origin access trial. So I think I played exactly what the press also played. And I didn't feel the same way that they did at all. So, I don't know. I feel like it got held up to the Mass Effect trilogy, like all three of them got held up to those standards for all mm-hmm. three games instead of being viewed as its own entity, which I guess, you know, it's in the Mass Effect series, so of course people are gonna compare it. But mm-hmm. I mean, I noticed a little bit of the weird facial animation stuff, but it wasn't a deal breaker, and I don't know. And then I thought it was great now that it's done. I don't know. I don't think it was as bad as people were saying when it first came out.
I'm super torn. I don't think it deserved as bad of press as it got, at least at the start. I think it is both unfair and completely inevitable that it was going to be held up to the trilogy. Mm. You know, I'm sure I'm doing the same thing as well. I will start out by saying that combat was by far the most fun I've had in any Mass Effect game, and in fact in any BioWare game. Combat was just leaps and bounds beyond what they did in the original trilogy. It was so much better, so much more fun. Mm-hmm. So active and reactive. The movement was great, the dashing, and I played an infiltrator, which is what I basically always play. So stealth was super fun. Sniping was very satisfying. Combat was just good. Combat was so, so good. I have a variety of feelings about the story that range from happy to not, that I think I'm still kind of sorting through. But overall, it was a game that I had fun playing, and it's a game that I'm glad that I played. The facial stuff, there were only a couple of times where it really looked bad enough that I was like, what the heck is going on here? But I guess what was hard for me to forgive or be more lenient of with that was and of course this is going to be my other problem throughout this discussion is I'm holding it up both to the trilogy, but I'm also holding it up to Inquisition mm-hmm. as the last major thing that BioWare did. And Inquisition had better facial animations, and I don't get how that's possible. Not that Inquisition was perfect, because it certainly wasn't, but that stuff looked better, less choppy, less awkward in Inquisition than it did in Andromeda, and that's really not the direction you want to be going.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also found, other than with the combat, I ended up comparing it in my mind more to Inquisition than to the previous Mass Effect games.
Well, I mean, it's Inquisition in space. The systems are all Inquisition systems. So many things are direct parallels. The pod, your cryopod points are Inquisition perks. Mm-hmm. There's so many things like that that are just directly correlated to stuff in Inquisition. And for me, the strength of Inquisition wasn't necessarily in its systems. It was in its narrative. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't super thrilled to see all of that stuff carry over. But I know a lot of people who really were into those systems who feel differently. So, you're never going to please everybody, I guess.
Yeah.
That's true.
especially with a game people have been waiting for so long.
Right.
So speaking of the new systems, I mean, there was obviously a lot. It was much more open world than any previous Mass Effect game. There was a whole different system for looting and crafting. There was a new scanning system because you had like an AI in your head as the Pathfinder main character. Was there anything you found worked particularly well or that you didn't enjoy at all?
I don't think so. I think all of, like, the extra stuff, like the crafting and the cryopod points and stuff like that, those were all kind of like, well, I have them, so I guess I'll just use them.
Yeah. Exactly that.
I think I made a sniper rifle. I made a couple sniper rifles because I also played Infiltrator, so I did a little bit of crafting. But like nothing like it didn't make like an actual impact on the game. Like, I don't know. They were just there. So I did them.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the scanning, and like mm-hmm. using it to like trace, whatever they're called. The, what are the words? The sigils in the vault?
Those mm-hmm. things? Oh yeah. The glyphs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
the remnant glyphs.
Yeah. I liked that. And I liked using it to, like, find things for quests, but I mean, nothing really stands out as, like, that was really shitty or that was really cool.
Well, and I don't want to be a butt about this, but also, like, the scanning, they found a cool narrative reason for it, but, like, that's also a direct port from Inquisition, too. Like,
how do you mean? Like the
well, the radar? The searching function that you have in Inquisition. It struck me as, I mean, that's not entirely fair because scanning does some cool things where you're like seeing behind structures or like, you know, seeing like with the remnant stuff, it was cool to see the paths that were leading to things. But I guess my gut reaction when I first did it was I was like, oh, this is like searching in Inquisition. Mm. But with a cooler sort of
interface
story behind it and more stuff to do. Yeah. And I liked that it actually gave you information, like, that you could read on the side. So that was cool for sure.
Yeah,
I liked that there was a reason for it. But at the same time, I didn't draw the parallel with Inquisition, but I just thought, like, oh, every open world game has this. I mean, Witcher Vision or the Batman thing in the Arkham games. Like, they all have some sort of scanning ability.
Like Lara Croft, where you can see.
I think even Horizon has that, too. Aloy can see, like, footprints and shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Pam, I know you share my, like, hesitation, I guess, with open world games at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how you felt, because, like, this was definitely not, like, full open world. There were, you know, boundaries, and you were sort of limited from planet to planet. I did not mind it as much as I thought I would, you know, when I first heard open world, but mm-hmm. I'm still kind of at this point with BioWare where I feel like if you want to do a good story, I'd rather you just do that with fun combat missions along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it wasn't like I wasn't annoyed by it or anything. So I'm curious how you felt.
I sort of went up and down on it at first, like when on the first planet that you really get to explore, or I explored Eos, it sort of made sense with improving the planet's viability and going through the world and finding things to do to increase, you know, the chances of your people being able to live there. Mm-hmm. It made sense. I thought that really worked. And then I thought sort of as the game went on, it was really easy to max viability, and then it was just a bunch of stuff to do on the planet with no real reason to do it, and a lot of the time it wasn't particularly interesting things to do either. So, I mean, it wasn't the worst open world. Like, I did like that there was fast travel that was actually fast, so mm-hmm. it didn't take forever to go from place to place. And also, the best companion dialogue happened when you were in the Nomad.
Yes.
So,
And that was smart. Yes. That was very smart.
That was very smart. So it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. Like, I think the open world was handled better than it was in Inquisition. But I also would have been happy with a series of pretty hallways to run down.
I mean, I think the nomad is part of what makes it, too, because, mm-hmm. like, riding on the horse in Inquisition is still a pretty slow process.
Plus, you don't get the dialogue on the horse.
Good point. Exactly. Yeah, your people aren't –
Yeah.
But, like, the nomad – I really loved the nomad. It took parts of the Mako. Like, it took the just sheer, like, I don't know, ballsiness of the Mako where you're just like, I'm going to drive up this cliff. And the Mako's like, okay. The nomad took that but made it a little more practical, a hell of a lot easier to control. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, that is definitely the best vehicle in a Mass Effect game. And they had a very low bar to clear on that, but they, like, really, really cleared it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I loved the nomad.
I loved, you know, pulling up. I know we talked about this. Like, pulling up and doing that, like, 90-degree turn. Yes. So you're like, what up? And jumping out of the Nomad to be able to just go right into combat. Like, that was super fun and super satisfying.
Yeah, I upgraded everything. The first thing that I upgraded – okay, so I'm lying about not using the systems because I upgraded the Nomad. and I upgraded, like, everything I possibly could on it. And so I would, like – do that, like, sweet spin into enemies and, like, pop out and there'd be, like, a shield over top of the Nomad. And I'd be like, here I am, and just, like,
And I will say, too, that as much as I ignored vendors for every other reason, I bought every single Mako skin I could find.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. For the rest of it, in terms of the crafting and the research and the developing of armor and weapons, I was like, I don't really care about this. Mm-hmm. I used my development points just because I had them, but I wasn't really interested.
Also, Sam doesn't shut up if you don't use them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. but I wasn't really interested in that. But I did research and craft and buy every nomad upgrade and paint job and everything. That was the one part that I actually liked that for.
Yeah, like... So I'm not a crafting person in any game. That's just never a fun system for me. So, you know, that was never going to be my favorite part of Andromeda, and that's fine. I felt like the spacing was really weird because you go through those early levels so quickly, and then you slow down pretty substantially when you get to, like, 40, 50, 60, and then the gear starts to be level locked for you. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be a little irritating because it's like, I just want to craft a new set of gear. I have all the stuff to do it. I'm sick of being level locked. I've been in this same set forever now. And, like, I did, you know, craft a new set of gear every time it was available for me, but I crafted the same set every time. It was just the improved version of it, you know? Mm. So, like, that's really not especially compelling to me in the end. And, you know, mods and, like, the different weapon, you know, barrels and scopes and all that, like, that's never really, I don't know, I just don't find those to be super interesting decisions in the long run.
Yeah.
It's just like, let me get out there and fight some shit, and that's all I really want to do. I don't want to sit here and think about these min-max decisions. It's just not compelling to me.
Yeah, I felt the same. There was one, like, I found a pistol that shot grenades, and I was like, well, this is a cool change from a normal pistol. But other than that, yeah, I didn't do a whole lot. Orkchop asked if anyone named their crafted weapons and armor. I personally did not.
I started naming a couple after friends or people on Twitter, but then I didn't make enough of them to really keep up with it.
I named... my first sniper, the Snip Snop. And then I named the second one Snip Snop Mach 2.
Nice.
And then the Snip Snop Mach 3, because I'm really original. And then I think I called my armor... I named it something. I think I called it, like, the new hotness. And then I just put, like, V1, V2 whenever I made more... I mean, I only did it so that I could know which ones I made and which ones I could get rid of.
That's smart.
Yeah. I would, otherwise I would just type, like, you know, just smash on my keyboard, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, it doesn't even matter what it's called, really. Except for the Snip Snop, I liked that one.
Did either of you play any of the multiplayer?
No.
I didn't. I watched my husband play a whole bunch of it, and it looks super, super fun. He played a bunch of the multiplayer on Mass Effect 3, too, which looked interesting, not as fun as this. So I'm kind of tempted to go do some of it now that I'm done with the story.
Yeah, I liked the multiplayer in ME3, so if it looks fun. It looked
even better than that.
Okay. Maybe I'll try.
From an observer's perspective.
Yeah, I don't, like, and I played it in ME3 because it was like, if you want full galaxy whatever, galaxy readiness, right. Like, mm-hmm. you have to play. So this time I didn't even look at it because it wasn't related to the main story at all. But maybe I'll check it out because I did like it in ME3, so.
Yeah.
Plus, like, you can play Solarians. Come on.
Yeah, and Krogans and all kinds of stuff.
I did it once by accident.
With the Apex missions?
Yeah, with the Apex missions. Because for some reason, when you go onto an Apex mission and you can either just, like, send a strike team, which is just an AI thing, it takes, like, 4 hours, like the war table in Dragon Age Inquisition, mm-hmm. or you can do it yourself. And for some reason, sending a strike team is the X button, which is on the Xbox, which is like the one you use less, whereas go yourself is the A button, which is like the default, like, select button. Oops. So I accidentally did it myself. I got this big long loading screen. I could hear some combat happening around me. Finally, it loaded in and I was dead. No. And then someone came and revived me. And then I, like, died immediately again. And I just, like, died about 12 times in a row. And then it ended. And I was like, well, that was fun.
Oh, no.
I did the same thing because it's the same on PC where it's X is send a strike team. Space, which is what you usually use, is do it yourself. And I hit space by mistake one time and ended up backing out before I was, like, actually in the game or in the lobby. But on PC, it's a real pain in the ass. It fully boots you out of the game, essentially back to the main menu screen to pull into multiplayer. And then if you exit out of multiplayer, you have to get back and reload your game again, which, like, I understand from a technical standpoint why it probably needs to work that way. But it was a real hassle to go back and forth between the two.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not sure why they even did that, integrate it.
I agree. Like, I get, again, like, narratively, okay, yeah, it's kind of fine, the idea that, you know, you could go participate in these missions, but, like, if that's not going to work well technically without you having to jump back and forth between these two things, maybe we find another way to do this, or maybe we scrap it.
Yeah. Yeah. My first reaction, so I didn't accidentally load in, so my first reaction was, oh, that's really cool, I'm not doing that ever. And then I, like... went and, like, assigned my other teams or whatever, but I was like, any of these, no, I'm not doing. But I was like, oh, that's cool, you can be like, yeah, I'm gonna go instead of, you know, my dudes. But
I can see
how in reality that's not entirely practical, but yeah, I was like, oh, that's cool, but no.
So what did everyone think of our new protagonist, Ryder?
I love her.
Did you both keep the name Sarah, or did you name her something different?
I kept the name on the first one that I made, and then I didn't like her enough to to keep going, so I made a new one and changed the name, but yeah.
I named her after my dog.
Aww.
I kept Sarah, and it was nice to hear the NPCs actually say that occasionally.
Yeah,
so.
I liked that a lot.
But yeah, I liked her a lot. She, you know, for me, is kind of polar opposite from the way I played my Commander Shepard. My Commander Shepard was always very, like, professional, to the point, no nonsense. And Sarah, at least the way that I played her, I did a little bit of that with her, but she was much more like, has a sense of humor, is pretty sarcastic, can be a smartass. I liked, and I've seen a lot of conversation about this as people have played through, like, I also liked the way that the crew felt like a young group of people who don't really know what they're doing and are figuring it out as they go.
Yeah.
I thought that made sense given the story, and I thought it was a fun way to play as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did kind of the opposite with Ryder, where I picked always the professional response or the gear one, whichever that one it was. Or maybe that was professional, and then the logical one is the other one that I picked. And then mm-hmm. I only picked, like emotional or, like, relating to the other characters when they were my teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Lexi's write-up of me was, like kind of interesting because she was like, you're like this when you're doing this, but you're like, you have another side to you when you're talking to your teammates. And I was yeah, that's what I'm doing.
It's cool that I got that, though. So if you haven't noticed that, that's under when you go to your quest, there will be – no, I'm sorry, in your codex.
Yeah.
There's one that's like the journey so far that will go through like your relationship with all your different companions and your personal profile. Like it's just really interesting because you kind of get the sense of like – what the game thinks you're doing. Mm-hmm. And of course it's right because, yeah. You know, it knows exactly what you're doing, but it's still really fun and kind of gratifying to read that.
Yeah. Or like reading updates on your relationships with the companions too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, this person is like starting to talk to you more and like feels like they can talk to you about like personal stuff. And you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, good. When can we kiss? Another thing that I noticed about Sarah was when you're just driving around on the Mako, there was one particular like set of dialogue where it's like some Ket dude who's like talking to you, and he's like, I am this guy, and I'm the person that runs this planet, so you better leave. And she's like, I am the Pathfinder, blah 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 blah. I was like, who are you? I was like,
you're a giant nerd.
Yeah, I'm so now I'm super curious, and I want to do another playthrough as Scott because I'm so curious. Are they that different? Because their background stories uh-huh. are different. They did different things before they left for Andromeda. Like he worked at the Charon Mass Relay, and she did like a peacekeeping mission.
Mm-hmm.
Even their on Twitter, the voice actors say that they approached the lines in different ways. So I'm like, I'm so curious, like if he is as like snarky and sarcastic and like just like funny as she is, or if he's like a little more professional and not like that.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah, I really liked Ryder. I loved how much of a departure it was from Shepard, because Shepard was like this big military hero even before really Mass Effect 1, and right. Ryder was just, you know, she had experience as sort of like an explorer and an adventurer, but she wasn't I guess used to being the one in charge, and all of a sudden she finds herself in charge of this huge undertaking. So mm-hmm. I really liked that it seemed like at times she was a little bit out of her element. And I also just found the voice acting was really great, and I loved the sort of snarky responses, and she was just like really super likable.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's go to the companions now. We had a whole new set of people to get to know, and also smooch maybe. Anyone have any favorite companions?
I really like Drac.
Yeah.
I like him a lot. The old, super, super old Krogan. I liked went just at the very end, and this is not a spoiler, but you know, he calls you kid and you call him old man, yeah. And he thinks that's the funniest thing in the world. Like, I just found him really endearing and interesting because we haven't really seen Krogan from that era before, who remember what it was like before the Genophage, and
yeah,
you know, when they were still a major power in the Milky Way.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was like he was really interesting, like walking in on like background stuff about him, like when Lexi is mm-hmm. talking to him and she's like, your prosthetics are failing and you are down to like one lung or whatever, and he's like, oh, it's yeah. okay, I had four. Like,
Lexi has a crush on him.
Oh,
though,
yeah, big
I'm
time.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he was really cool. I liked, once I got to know her, I liked Vetra. I thought she was awesome. And then PB, honestly, it took me a little while. I wasn't, like, too interested in her until, like, the story got going a little more. But she was very funny. And, like, her dialogue, especially, like, in the Nomad with with other characters is very good. Mm-hmm. I think I liked, like, crew interactions. I think I liked Jahl and Liam's interactions the best. Because they were, like super, like, friendly, like give each other buds. Shit, like, all the time. Yeah, also that.
I love that scene. First that they both weren't wearing shirts, and then they're also like, let's just get all of the offending each other out of the way right now.
God, yeah. And she's like, are you sure this is a good idea? And he's like, yeah, I just don't want to say something later and be like, and have it be really bad. I was like, okay. What did you guys think of Cora? I'm curious.
I mean, the two major avenues there for me was I felt like it was weird how much, I don't know. I felt like the tone didn't quite work with her conversations about your dad, about Alec Ryder, because while I think it was supposed to come off as a mentor relationship, there were moments where it was like, this just feels a little uncomfortable. I feel like I'm talking to my stepmom or like, you know, or a lady who was like romantically involved with Alec.
Yeah.
Which I think would have to have some bizarre implications if you play a Scott in Romance, Cora.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that for me, just like I get what they were going for, but I just felt like the tone didn't quite work. Mm. And then all of her stuff with the Asari is just real rough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. I just, it was delivered so like heavy-handed, or that's not even exactly what I mean. It was just delivered with like no sense of self-awareness at all. Mm. It's just, I don't know. I mean, we all know that person who's like, well, I lived in Japan for a year, you know, and that very much felt like who Cora was.
Yeah. Pam, were you going to?
Yeah, I was going to say basically the same thing. I found her, she was sort of my least favorite of the companions. It was weird how she was always talking about the Asari. It's like we had PB, but like whenever PB and Cora would talk about Asari stuff, it was just, I don't know, it was strange. I didn't really like much of her character development.
The
stuff with PB is difficult because PB is not a traditional Asari in a lot of ways and doesn't sort of want anything to do with a lot of Asari traditions. And then you have Cora, who is not an Asari, who is, you know, kind of getting a little high and mighty about that. And that's just a very uncomfortable dynamic when you follow through to its logical conclusion of what that looks like in the real world.
Yeah, I am definitely in agreement with, like, with all of that. I found when she's like, I'm just going to quote Asari scripture at you. And I was like, don't.
Yeah. I'll tell you the point that really with that really when you and this is a little bit of spoilers, but when you are on the Asari arc, and she's like quoting various Asari like thinkers and philosophers at some Asari to try and inspire them, that was very cringeworthy. I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they wanted to give us an Asari commando on our team, they should have given us an actual Asari commando instead of, like, a human that wants to be an Asari commando. Like,
And I mean, for the most part, it did seem like the Asari largely accepted Cora.
Yeah.
You know, because she – so her whole story is that she served with a Huntress unit. Like, she was embedded with them, essentially. and learned to fight the way Asari fight, which is, like, fine, and there's a way to do that story, and this wasn't the way.
Yeah.
And I do think, as you said, I do think it would have been more interesting, like, if you want to give us that story, just give us an Asari commando, because we've never had one of those. That would have been really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like they wanted to do two things with, you know, with the person who should have been Pathfinder and then Asari commando, but they, like, ran out of character slots or something.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, we can just make that the same person, yeah. Right? That won't have any issues. And this will kind of go into my feelings about PB as well, but, like, the Asari companions who we've had have largely been atypical Asari. Like, Liara is not typical in a lot of ways. PB is not. Mm-hmm. Samara was super atypical, despite being kind of, like, a paragon of what Asari aspire to. She also is, like, not the Asari you meet on the street every day.
Yeah.
I would love to have an Asari companion who is a little more like, here's what your typical Asari is like, because we really haven't gotten that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be cool. I didn't really even think about how Liara is not the most typical.
Well, and that kind of, so that's some of my stuff with PB2 is like, and even Lexi, we keep getting Asari who are very young. And I think, you know, that's a choice that makes sense when you want to have them be easily, be able to relate to humans a little more easily. With the exception of Samara, of course, who, you know, I don't know if we know how old she's supposed to be, but I'm sure it's older than Liara and PBR.
Yeah.
I want an older Asari on my team, and I want an older Asari on my team who is romanceable, because I think there's some weird stuff for me that kind of goes on when we keep getting these younger Asari who are on the team and the only ones that are able to be romanced. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was always a little uncomfortable with Liara as a romance for a variety of reasons, and I actually ended up romancing PB, which was okay, except for some stuff that we can talk about. But she sort of, when you complete her romance, she sort of talks about that this is, and again, this is spoilers for her romance. She talks about the fact that this is the first time that she's done, like, the Asari mind meld with another person.
Whoa.
And right?
Wow.
So, like, right. And that immediately sort of made me go, ooh, I mean, I don't know. I can see it both ways, right? It's supposed to be a young team that are getting to know each other and getting to know the world, but, like, I don't know, something about that for me just really stopped me in my tracks when she said it.
Phew.
Huh.
Oh, gosh. Baby, wah.
I will also say that her romance scene was a huge, it was just weird romancing her on a female rider, because that is a scene that was clearly choreographed, let's say, to be with her and a male rider.
Oh.
I mean, like, I'm sorry, BioWare, that is just not how two women have sex. It's just not.
Oh my god.
I did the first one, like the no strings attached romance with her.
Uh-huh.
But that was all. There was also, that one also involves zero gravity, which is like, people think that zero gravity sex would be awesome, whereas I think it would not be, because
that sounds almost impossible.
Yeah, yeah, it sounded weird. I also did that. It sounded weird. Because yeah. They were, like, bumping off of things. And it's like, no, it's fine. And it was, like, smash. And it's like, no, no, this is fine. It's like, what? No.
All right. So while we're on the topic, Dia Lucina asked, have any of the relationships matched up to Thane / who are you cheating on our beautiful tragic boy with?
Hey, look, I know that every BioWare romance can't be emotionally devastating and just, like, put me on the floor for a month, but, like, that is my level that I want, you know? And I didn't see any obvious candidates for that. When I saw the initial reveal of the companions, I really thought that I was going to go for Jahl. And I don't know why I veered off of that. I liked Jahl a lot as a companion. I know, Kaleri, you ended up romancing Jahl, so sure we'll let you did. Feel that one. And his was one of the romance scenes I watched before we talked today, since you had really talked that one up.
Oh, my face is getting hot just thinking about it.
But no, for me, Thane is still probably my definitive Mass Effect romance. I thought PB was a lot of fun. PB has a lot of fun back and forth banter, even when you're just friends with her. But her flirtatious banter that you get when you go into the relationship is super fun. It's just really cute. It's really sort of fast paced. And it's like, I don't know, for me, it's like how I would want that sort of interaction to go, where everyone is just very jokey, but there's like some subtle undertones, you know. I thought that was a lot of fun. I flirted with almost everybody at the start, just to see where we could go, you know. And the only other person that I sort of considered at all was Reyes Vidal. I did end up kissing him on my rider, and then had to turn him down because I knew at that point I wanted to lock into PB. And honestly, that was more of a strategic, like, betting on the fact that he wouldn't have a full romance because he wasn't a companion thing. If not for that, I might have just gone for him because, you know.
He was great.
Right. And he stabs you in the back, which is generally what I'm looking for in a romance in BioWare games. So. But I watched the rest of his as well. And it was sort of cuter and more tender than I expected it to be for him. But yeah, again, it's just like, it's hard to make that, like, I like the fact that they have given these other romance options for people who aren't squad mates, but it's super hard to make that decision knowing that you're not going to get, like, the full story arc that you do if you pick a squad mate.
Yeah.
So who did you all romance?
I romanced Jahl.
How was that?
Well. it was really good. It was like he like brings you home to meet like his family in like one of the, I think, like the mid romance arc or whatever for him. And that was really cute because he's like introduces you to his mom. And at this point, so here, let me set up how I how I had played this before this. I like romanced and like flirted with everybody up to the point where I have like their, also they're like mid, like just before you lock into their romance scene. So I turned down every single one that I could romance at that point.
Oh man. That's kind of rough.
Yeah. So like I turned down Suvi, I turned down Liam, I turned down Vedra, I turned down, oh my god, who else? I think, is that it? Is that all I could romance on the ship? I think so. Am I missing someone? No. Yeah, I turned them all down at like at the point where they're like, Ryder, is this real? Like, is what we have like a real thing? No. And then like Vetra's, I think, hurt me the most. Because you're like, she's like, is this real? And like your hands are getting really close and like you could hold her hand if you accept. But then like Ryder's like, yeah, no, sorry. Like, I thought we were just goofing around. And she like sits up immediately and she's like, okay, wow. And like walks away. And I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, I'm such an asshole. So I like, I turned down everybody and then I went to Jahl's and I was like, this better be worth it because like I just... I just like fucked up like the entire human, every species relationship that we're gonna have. So then he like brings you into his room and he's like, here's this thing that I made that I wanted to show you. And it's, like, this beautiful, like, galaxy projector that he made. And I loved that. And, like, he sends you, like, little love notes and stuff in the emails. Which is beautiful. And then, of course, like...
PB does, too, but they were mostly, like, PG-13 rated.
I mean, Jaws aren't like... like explicit or anything, but they're just like he calls you dearest one, and like he's like his emails eventually are like, it's like your friend Jaal, and then it's like your close friend Jaal, and it gets like more and more like really cute and romantic. And like his last, like, the very last scene of his is, like, extremely explicit.
Yeah.
And not at all what I was expecting, because, like, I knew that they said there was some pretty good banging, but I was not expecting what I got. Like, I don't even know if I can talk about it because, like, my cheeks are getting really warm right now. Like, you go, like... they both, like, strip down, you go into the water, and, like, it's, like, this, like, really nice thing where you're, like, together in the water, whatever, and then, like, you get out of the water, and it's, like, it just goes from 0 to 100 in, like, 3 seconds.
Yes.
And I'm, like, are you, wait, and, like, then it went, like, dark, like, after that, and I was expecting it to go to black way earlier.
Before we recorded, I was, like, waiting for it to cut away and waiting for it to cut away and waiting for it to cut away. And I was like, oh, wait, you're not going to cut away.
It doesn't until like the very, very last second. And I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
But it's really good.
I need to watch that one.
Yeah, do. Yeah, I... Oh, God, my face is so hot. Like, I was watching it and like... I play in the same room. I play, like, games in the same room as my boyfriend does. So, like, I was sitting here and I was like, boy, I really hope he doesn't come in because this will be awkward. man. But, like, I almost want to talk to the animators and be like, what? Like, what? Why? Like, what was that like animating that? Because I, like, I'm so curious. Like, how did you guys do that with, like, a straight face? Or did you not do it with a straight face? Man.
I mean, have you ever seen – there's a great panel conversation from some of the animators who worked on Bull's final romance scene in Inquisition, and the fact that for a while there they did have a fully realized penis for Bull, and they were trying to decide, like, is this too much and all of that. So there's some good, you know, other side of the BioWare coin discussion about, like, animating romance scenes.
That is true. Yeah, I remember that talk now. Yeah. yeah, I like there. I just did not expect what I got.
I didn't either, and I'll tell you, when I started watching it, I was like, "What is she talking about? This is relatively like tame or something." And then it just, like you said, it went from 0 to 60, and I was like, "Oh, I get it now."
Yeah. So I'm like, now I want to know what the other romances are like. anyway, let's move on.
So I wanted to romance Lexi, found out I couldn't, then I was just like, fuck this, my heart is broken. So no. I had the no strings attached romance with PB. I romanced that vid maker, which was pretty disappointing.
Oh yeah, that one wasn't very good.
That wasn't good at all. I made out with what's his name on Kadara?
Reyes.
Yeah, I made out with him. I made out with Liam at the start.
That's actually a good scene.
Yeah, I like that scene. And then I actually meant to romance Jaal because I really liked him. He's probably one of my favorite companions. But then I got to the Liam scene and where he was like, is this real? And I was said yes because I just wanted to see where it went. And I was planning to reload, but apparently the game only has 3 autosaves slots, and it auto-saves like once every 12 seconds or something. So I would have had to go back like an hour if I wanted to take it back. And I was like, okay, whatever. I'll just romance Liam.
Whatever. This is fine.
It's fine. And his was, I don't know. It was like, it had a cool lead up to it. Like, when he sort of takes you on this date, it was a pretty cool concept. But then in terms of the actual smooching, you just end up like on Eos in the dirt making out in your spacesuit. So I'm like, oh, that sounds
like a bad time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did not experience the pretty good banging that was advertised.
Man, you missed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the doc web has a couple questions. The first is, what did you think of the Angara? Were they more or less interesting than the previously established Milky Way alien species?
I wish the women had been designed a little differently. I thought it was a little jarring how different the two sexes looked for the Angara.
Yeah.
But, like, in terms of them as a culture, I don't know. They had some clear stuff going on that you learn about. But in general, I guess no, probably. I feel like I still know more about and am more interested in, like, the Turians and the Asari and the Salarians and et cetera. Like, the Angaran didn't quite feel as fleshed out to me, I guess. And maybe that will change in what seems like will be future installments based on some of the information you get at the very end of this game.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I almost found that we didn't get enough time with the Angara. So much of the game is spent on the Nexus or in the colonies that you're setting up instead of going, like, you go to Aya. I don't know, a third into the game, maybe. And then even then, like, I felt like there wasn't enough interaction with the Angara to actually give us more information. Like, we know, like you said, like, way more about the other species from the Milky Way. Yeah, they were just there. Like,
yeah,
it was like, we need to have a native species that lives here. So here you go. Here they are. And then we didn't get to really, like, go into a lot of, like, their background. Like, you only get that at the very end. So obviously, I think that maybe, like, the next Andromeda game, they haven't, like, said anything about it, but they're like, you can't just leave it where it is.
Right.
But, like, I feel like there would be more to learn later. Or even now, I guess, like, maybe now that, like, the immediate danger seems to be gone and we've kind of, like, come to, like, a plateau point now at the end of the game where, like, maybe, like, they could add on a DLC or something and we can go find out more. But I feel like during the course of the actual game that we have now, we didn't really figure out much, like, I don't know. They're cool. They look cool, but
I don't know. I hate to be fussy about things in the narrative that fall under the category of, like, willing suspension of disbelief. And I know that people were interacting with the Angara before our specific arc got there. Like, yeah. I get all that. But it was just very hard for me to accept the way that the Angara reacted to us and related to us. Like, it just seemed so fast and, like, so abbreviated in terms of first contact. It just,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just, and why should I, again, like, I hate to be nitpicky about stuff that's just like, you have to get past this or the game won't work, but, like, why does a universal translator work on a species from another galaxy? And, like, why do we even assume that Angarans kiss the way we kiss, or, you know, yeah, things like that, where it's, I can't I can't really hold that against the game because, like, at some point you just have to let go of that stuff. But also it's like, but these are opportunities to do something more or do something different or a little more creative. Just find another answer to these questions because they are legitimate questions you would ask in this kind of scenario.
Yeah, the timeline was really strange because first, like you mentioned, the translator works on the Angara, but it doesn't work on the Ket. So that's weird. And then, like, then we're supposed to believe that some people have met Angara on other planets, and that doesn't count as first contact?
Right? Because it wasn't a Pathfinder, I guess?
You know, we've had, like, people know what the Angara look like because they're around all over Andromeda. Like, they have a base established on Eos. They've obviously been there a while. Oh, not Eos, but Vold. They've obviously been there a while, the ice planet. And then they've, like, been other places. And then suddenly it's like, oh, now we're just meeting them officially?
Well, and they've been, I mean, that was one of the interesting things to me, too, is when you start scanning planets all over the galaxy, they've been to almost every point in that galaxy.
Yeah.
And that's, it's really interesting, the implications of that, because, you know, yeah, we're told that they've been kind of pushed back a little bit because of the Ket and their involvement. But it's like, this is a species that was probably maybe even more advanced than almost anybody in the Milky Way. Because, you know, the Milky Way, we're piggybacking off of Mass Effect technology, which is not ours. Yeah. You know, we didn't figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, gosh, the timeline is too strange. And if you think about it too much, it's like...
it starts to fall apart. Yeah, you can't really look at it sideways.
Yeah,
I guess I didn't really think too hard about anything, but the only thing that I found with the Angara was that it's, you know, I'm just kind of bored with every major species being humanoid. Like, we need to find something that doesn't look like humans.
Bring back the Elcor.
Yeah. And the Hanar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see what you're both saying about sort of the Angara as a people and not knowing that much about them, but in terms of individuals, I really liked all of them that we interacted with. Like, I really loved Jahl and how he, you know, said sort of whatever was in his head, and I liked the Moshi, and I found all of the individual Angara that we got to know, I really liked them, and I thought they were pretty interesting.
Yeah. The Moshi was cool.
Although it does remind me of, like, the worst line in the entire game where you're going to save the Moshi and then the Archon or whoever is like, you're not taking her. And you go, no, you're not taking her.
Oh, Ryder.
All right. So there was some stuff brought up. I know D'Alessina wrote an article specifically about this before the game came out about colonization and sort of how that's problematic. Mm. How did you find the game was in that aspect? Do you think they addressed that at all, or was it sort of as bad as some had expected?
The first mission made me really uncomfortable and in fact was... It really sort of turned me off to Liam for a while because he had such a sort of immediate and violent reaction to, you know, so yeah, it's Ket that you're facing in the first mission and you don't know it yet. But like Liam's immediate first reaction was just like, what the hell's wrong with these people? Why are they shooting at us? And it's like, well, why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Like, think about being in their shoes. This is a horrifying situation to happen to someone if we really think that they've never, you know, experienced an alien race landing on their planet before. Like, I don't think violence is a shocking response to that. And Liam was just so adamant about that and so violent about it. And that really... made me uncomfortable in that first mission.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that and beyond some sort of general overtures toward, you know, we have to work with the Angara and et cetera, I felt like it was largely not dealt with at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's the right option. It's a tough thing, right? Because I'm not sure that they necessarily would have been equipped to deal with it well. I'm not exactly sure what dealing with it well would have even looked like. Mm-hmm. But this was definitely more of just like, we're not going to deal with it at all.
Yeah.
I did find that there were some parts. I mean, it definitely wasn't like a big focus in the game, but I did like that people, you know, humans would say to Ryder, like, oh, when are we going to go down to this planet? And you know, you have an option of saying, like, people yeah. already live on this planet. Like, we just yeah. can't go and live there too. Like, we have to talk to them and work out something. And there was one side quest on Aya where someone talked about how there was a limited amount of people that could live there, and the Angara mm-hmm. did. And by sending your sort of ambassadors there, it meant that they had to leave. So you had to sort of deal with that aspect of it. So there was there was a little bit about it that sort of made me feel more comfortable that you had an option as Ryder to be like, we are the outsiders here. We have to play by their rules rather yeah. than just, you know, go in and do what you want.
Yeah, I thought, like, I found that there were some conversation options that you could pick and some, like, the very first outpost, it didn't. As far as I know, I don't think it made a difference at all, but it made a difference to me being able to pick the option. So once you put mm-hmm. down your outpost, you can say, they ask you, like, do you want to do, like, military-based outpost, or do you want to do, like, a science-based outpost? And I was like, science. Like, it took me, like, a 0.1 yeah. of a second to decide that, because I was like,
let me think about this.
And then, like, every decision after that that I made later was, like, either a science-based or research-based. Anything that had military, like, connotations to it, I was like, nope, that's not happening. Anything, like, especially when the Moshe I was talking to, anything she wanted me to do, I basically did. Except for the mission to save her, I did what Jala wanted, because I was like, I gotta romance this boy, so... I mean, there definitely was some, like, kind of, like, uncomfortable feeling stuff where, especially, like, Zufi mentioned in the first mission where it was, like, Liam, like, just repeatedly shoots a body. I was like, you can stop that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, just stuff where, especially, like, some of the background, like, noise that you can hear where people are, like, generally disgruntled that they have to stay on the Nexus, and it's like, these people have been here a long time, we're new, like, we don't have any, like, if we had to, we would have to live on the Nexus for the rest of our lives. Like, yeah, I don't know how they would have been able to address it in a game like this, but I for as much as I could, I made, like, the most peaceful decisions as possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To make myself feel better.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a question from Act 1-1. What did you like about your favorite explorable planet?
What was your favorite what one? Is my...
Yeah, exactly.
I have two questions in there.
Yeah, I've got two that come to mind. One is the planet that's not really a planet. It got, yeah. like, exploded. H something something. Where, like, all the parts where you get out of the Nomad, they're all in domes. But when you're in the Nomad, it's, like, way less gravity. So you can, you can, like, jump super far into the air and jump over chasms. And, like, the people in your Nomad are, like...
Yes.
Like, screaming at you not to jump over this giant chasm. Like, I think one, like, Jal, I think, is like, Ryder, no! And I, like, pushed yeah. the button. I was like, Ryder, yes! Like, just leaping over things and, like spinning around in the air and, like, yeah. That planet was really cool. Like, it didn't, I mean, there's not much to do on there except for the quests that you get sent to do. Except for driving the Nomad around, which is awesome. I spent way longer than I needed to be there just doing that. And then the second planet that I liked, like based on what was there and actually a planet, was Vold, the ice planet. I loved that planet a lot. It's like cool ice structures and like driving on the snow and the ice was actually realistic. Like you would slip and like slide around on the ice and in the snow, like big like poofs of snow would come out off, like up off the Nomad, and like the vaults were good and all the, I just like the snow. And like the one thing that I noticed was I had armor on that had a scarf. And so anytime there would be a cutscene that showed Ryder, there would be like snow accumulation on her scarf. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is so cool. And the Nomad was like, had like little frozen bits, and it looked like it had been in the snow for a long time. Like, yeah. Oh, I loved that planet. It was so cool.
I liked a lot of stuff about Kadara, like how it looked. I thought it was probably the most beautiful planet, mm-hmm. but Kadara was kind of wrecked for me by the fact that you had to get on the planet and then take the elevator down to the slums mm-hmm. and then walk over. I mean, it's just that was sort of irritating, which is a stupid thing to, you know, kind of get caught up on, but it was just like extra steps in the process every time you had to go down there. Yeah. And I don't know about you guys, but I super like could not get into a good rhythm with the quests where I was able to go do multiple things like succinctly or efficiently.
Yeah.
Like I could never get in a rhythm where it was like, yeah, okay, now I can go do all the stuff on Kadara, aside from like the first time you just go do all the stuff on Kadara, you know. Mm-hmm. It was, I felt like I was jumping back and forth between planets constantly and just in such an inefficient way, which drives me up a wall. I hate that.
There was way too much of that. And it also just way too many quests where it's like, go to this planet, now go to this planet in the system, now go to this planet in the system. Yeah. And that stuff should have just been cut, especially the ones where it's just like, go find a signal by scanning this system and then this other system and then this other system. Like that should have just been not in the game at all.
No, I agree with you totally. So given that I had those kind of reservations about Kadara, I actually think Illidan was probably my favorite. Mm. I thought the way that the Krogan had established New Tuchanka was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
I loved whatever the heck the worm was, driving past it and seeing it out in the distance with the sense of scale that you really get on these planets was super, super cool and very intimidating. Like, it was scary when you got too close to it, which I love.
Yeah. I want to know how they animated that guy, too. Because it kind of, like, it looks like it just builds up in front of itself to move around, kind of like those bridges do in the vaults, where, like, the pieces come, like, forward instead of, like, being an entire entity, whatever. Yeah, Illidan was cool, too. I want Sam to shut up about, like, 50% of the time. when he's like, oh, the temperature is hot. Oh, nope, now it's back to normal. I'm like, I know. Or like, oh, it's super cold now. And then you're like, get back in the Nomad. And he's like, temperatures are back to normal. I'm like, please shut up.
Especially on Illidan, though, where it's just like going in and out of the shade.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's hot, it's cold, it's hot, it's cold.
And he like, he's interrupting banter to tell you these things.
Right.
So I hope that's something that they'll look into changing, because, like, shut him up.
He also constantly told me that I had email and I did not.
Yeah, me too. All the time.
Yep. Interesting.
So my favorite explorable planet, I think, is actually Eos, just because it made the most sense to me narratively. Like, going there, building that first settlement, and then doing the quest, like, go clear out this Ket base and it will make this planet safer for your people. Like, I found all the quests that you had to do really made sense for what you were trying to do in the story. And that's also where I found and fought my first architect, which was pretty awesome. And the first place I saw Remnant technology. So I liked Eos.
Those architects are the coolest thing.
Oh, yeah. They were fun fights. They were, again, like, I like fights that feel intimidating in terms of their scope and scale. I felt like these were even more intimidating than, like, dragon fights were in Inquisition, so I was excited Absolutely. About that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, they, like... Like, I stumbled upon the first one. Like, I didn't even... I was just, like, rolling around.
Yeah.
And then they were like, oh, this is where those scientists disappeared. And I was like, cool. And, like, I pulled in and I was like, what the fuck? And then I spent, like, 20 minutes fighting this thing, being afraid that I was going to die. Like, I was, like, terrified the entire time. But, like, the cool thing about those fights is that there's obvious weak points and your teammates are like, shoot the thing. And you're like, oh, thank you. And like,
I really enjoyed every time it spawned other remnants, PB would go, it's making babies. And I'm like, no, PB, no, that's not really what's happening, but okay.
Oh, those were so good. What good fights.
All right, so we're going a little bit long, but we've got some... more good listener questions. So this one is from Sheep the Diamond, and he asks, what are the hardest decisions? I had a really bad one yesterday and curious to know if they get worse. I'm going to say, spoiler alert,
big time.
Probably.
The worst one for me was the Krogan versus Salarian decision.
No, mine too.
I mean, that was really the one where I just kind of walked away for a minute.
Yeah. I got up from my chair and I, like, tweeted about it. I was I can't believe this decision.
Yeah. There was nothing else. The only other one that I was kind of on the fence about was the ancient Angaran AI, which had, like, no long-term implications at all except some cool banter if you did it. So, yeah. You know, that was the only other one I agonized over.
That was the only hard one for me, just because I had no idea. Like, this AI was asking you to kill it. And then it was killing people, and I was just like, oh, I want it, but it also seems dangerous. I don't know.
Right.
Except, yeah, as you said, it really had no impact on anything.
Yeah.
So people got mad I brought it to the Nexus, but then nothing really happened.
Yeah.
Then nothing after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but definitely the hardest was the Krogan Salarian thing. What did you guys – what did you all pick for that?
I brought Drac with me.
Oh!
yeah!
Oh, so no.
I ended up picking the Krogan, but as soon as I made that choice, I felt bad.
Oh.
Like, really bad. And I was so tempted to reload, and I was like, no, don't. You picked it. You made your bed.
Yeah.
I picked the Salarians just because there was a Pathfinder with them.
Yeah. If I hadn't brought Drac, I don't think I would have picked saving the Krogan. But because he was just, like, looking at me the whole time.
Yeah.
And he's like, those are my scouts. Those are my, and I'm like, please.
I also picked the Salarians. I don't know that I could have if Drac had been in the party at the time. And I did that both, Pam, as you said, because they had a Pathfinder with them, so it seemed like it made good sense. And also because I felt really guilty because I had just sided with Gil in the fight that he and Callow had. And I was like, God, Callow's never going to forgive me if I don't do this.
Oh, gosh. Man, what timing on that for you. Holy smokes.
Yeah. But also, that was definitely the hardest one.
The Salarian Pathfinder is a woman. And I have, like, there are very few Salarian women.
Yeah.
In the first three games. They seem like they're all over the place in Andromeda.
Yeah. Same thing with Turian women, which was fun.
Yeah. Gosh, I think, I'm trying to think of another
I guess maybe the Sloane versus Vidal decision.
I mean, that seemed pretty easy for me since
he me
was
too.
A dink. Like, the most predictable backstabbing I have ever seen.
I'm angry. I told you about that at the time. I'm like, I really had all these elaborate ideas about who might actually be the charlatan. And then it ended up being the most obvious person who I had all but discounted because it was so obvious. And I guess, I mean, that was kind of... I guess that's sort of my bigger objection with Andromeda right now, and why I said at the start that I don't really know how I feel about the narrative as a whole, is it just felt really, really standard. Like, really pretty. I mean, like, the Ket or the Borg. The Ket or the Borg. Like, just do something different. And, like, listen, BioWare, I love you. I love your jam about ancient technology that we don't understand and building upon civilizations that already screwed up and we don't even know how. I love that shit. You know I do. But please, you got to have something else. You got to find something else in your back pocket because it's just getting repetitive. Like, I mean, the, you know, in what way is the Archon not Corypheus?
Like almost exactly. They even have the same kind of body shape.
Even everything the Archon is saying during the final mission to like taunt you, I'm like, hey Corey, how you been? No, I'm not worthy. I've heard about it before.
I try to think of some of the other decisions, like what because the Moshi, when you save the Moshi, you either you have the chance to blow up the facility that's changing the Angara to changing the Angara to the Ket. So you have the option to do that, or you have the option to save like hundreds of Angara. That decision, it took me a second, but then like I was also aiming to romance Jahl for like the end game, so I was like, I'll just do what he wants. And then I got chewed out by the Moshi real good.
Yeah, I saved them.
Me too.
That interesting.
Wasn't difficult.
I wanted to do what the Moshi said, but if I think like the next game I would probably do that since I don't think I'll romance Jahl again.
What about PB's mission? I totally shot her friend.
Did you?
I was tempted, but I didn't.
Yeah, no, I didn't either.
In part because I wanted to romance her, and I didn't want to be like, I felt like, wow, that's a really awful thing to be the new girlfriend who shoots the old girlfriend.
That's true.
Plus, like, if you shoot her, you don't get that sweet, like, the scene after where like she's talking and then PB just like backhand punches her as they're running.
That was so good.
I missed that. I'm actually was surprised that PB wasn't more upset with me because I found the whole that action kind of silly. She's like, oh, should I save this technology or should I save this girl who's trying to kill us? And then when it popped up that I could just shoot her, I kind of laughed. It was kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, I was like, save the technology.
I could just see you being like, yes.
Yeah, I should have mentioned this when we were talking about romances, but I think part of why I liked PB was kind of what I thought Sarah was going to be. Like that sort of carefree, goofy thing. But like PB didn't get under my skin the way that Sarah had a tendency to do with some things. And of course that was compounded by the fact that I was playing an elf. So.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Just like quickly on the topic of companion missions, did you guys have a favorite one?
I liked Liam's because it was just like space cowboy ridiculousness.
Yeah, Liam's was my favorite too.
Liam's was fun. I liked the end of Jahl's because I got to give him a kick-ass scar.
Yes.
Let's see.
That stays for the whole game too.
Yeah.
Like, he looks different for the rest of the game.
And here's, I guess, a testament either to my memory or the lasting impact. I can't really remember what most of the other ones were right now.
Cora's is the Asari arc. Yeah.
That was kind of fun.
Which, so I have to commend BioWare for doing the battle in space.
Yeah, that was great. Oh yeah.
Yeah, like okay, the best, like the sound designers there. I want to like shake their hand because like it was quiet and like everything was kind of muffled and like things would like float away when you shot them or like if you had somebody using biotics, you would like throw somebody and they would like keep going in the trajectory that they were going in. And then, like, the really awesome bit, like, where they use their biotic shields to save the ship, like, that was the coolest thing that I've seen, like, biotic characters do.
Yeah. Yes.
So, like, the whole, like, battle in space, like, that was the coolest part. Also, it was scary.
Yeah.
There was one point where, like, something made a noise, and I actually, like, jumped out of my chair because it was, like, it was dark, and it reminded me of going to the Ardat Yakshi place.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Yeah. Like, I was getting serious, like, Mass Effect 2 vibes, and I was like, this is good, but also scary, but really good. And I was, like, creeping along, and I was like, this is so good. I loved it. And then, like, Vetras was the Turian arc?
Oh, I really liked... No, Vetras was her sister.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I actually did like Vetras a lot. I kind of forgot about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun. That was really good. Let's see. Who else? Yeah, we already talked about...
PBs. What was PBs? Drax? Is his the whole Drax. Thing uncovering what Spender's up to?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you right. You save the botanist.
Yeah. Okay. I did like a lot of that, too. I don't know why I'm forgetting. Like, I don't know. In hindsight, yeah, I remember more about them. It's just they kind of faded into me or faded into the background for me as set pieces because there wasn't a lot of, like, visual distinction with any of them except for maybe, like, Liam's and Korra's.
Yeah. Liam's and Korra's easily stand out. The thing about Drax was, like... The introduction of a Krogan character who doesn't really fit traditional Krogan traits. I laughed during Liam's mission, but I don't think I ever had as good of a belly laugh during like any other part of the game except when this poor Krogan, they open the door for him and he falls back on the floor and he's just like looking up at like Ryder and Drax and he's like, oh, hi guys.
Yeah, he's great.
I was laughing so hard. I was like, you precious baby, I am saving you.
And Kesh, can we talk about Kesh? And just like Lady Krogan in general and how great they are?
Oh, yes.
I'm really happy. Oh, yeah, that reminds me. So who did you all pick at the end for your like temporary council person?
Oh, no. I wanted to pick the Krogan.
I was tempted too.
And I wish I had after Tan was like, oh, it's a good thing you didn't pick the Krogan. I was like, I almost reloaded because I was like, you fucker.
Watch me.
Yeah. I picked Bradley.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, and then I got chewed out again by the Moshai.
Yep, exactly.
She's like, oh, we all know whose people that benefits. And I was like, oh, fuck me. Like,
yeah, right.
Yeah. I picked the Moshai because I was just like, good. I'm not gonna pick a human. And it also really bothered me that at the end of the game, they keep saying humanity's new home.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, that really bothered me.
I object to the idea that crash landing on a place means you de facto now own the planet, but whatever.
Yeah, like, Meridian is, like, this badass fucking, like, planet inside of a planet.
Yeah.
And now it's humans? I don't think so.
Yeah.
And plus, like, there was a lot of other species that helped you.
Yeah.
Well, and if anyone has any legitimate claim to that, it is for sure the Angara.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I want to get your thoughts on the last mission, too. Like, speeding down the planet in the Nomad with, like, all these, like, ships and people around you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Super awesome. I like to... it's always nice in these games where you have to spend so much time recruiting all these allies to see the allies show up for you at the end.
Yeah.
I thought that was handled relatively well. It was cool to see people sort of, like, flying in. And since I had my little smooch moment with Reyes Vidal, it was cool to hear him come over the comm and be like, yo, we're here for you. And it was like, that's my boy. so, yeah, I liked a lot of stuff about the last mission. I was a little disappointed that you didn't get a boss fight exactly.
Mm.
like just one big bad to fight. That's kind of fun. You got a little bit of that since you've got another architect there, but it like wasn't the same as fighting an architect on the planets. I actually found it harder to fight them on the planets. Because even though you're in a confined space, it's not using all of it is of its abilities as much as it was before. So yeah, but I thought overall, like, I always like missions. Part of the reason I like the Trespasser DLC so much is that it felt like there was an urgency from start to finish, and it feels like you have to rush through, and it's just terrifying, and, like, your heart's beating the whole time. And I got a decent amount of that from this, so I was pretty happy with it. How about you?
I liked it a lot as well. I thought it was really exciting. I really thought the planet was gorgeous, so just driving along there was great. And again, seeing all those characters. And I think that's where all of your decisions through the game really came in, like who showed up for you and who didn't. So I really liked the end. I thought it was good to see everyone come together. And I also really liked that at the end you got to see everyone again. Like, it didn't just end. You got to talk to everyone and be like, hey, we did it. Yeah. Let's party.
That actually threw me off. I was like, we're done. And then it was like, I don't know, 1 a.m. And I was like, I'm not done. Still have like an hour and a half to go.
All right. Next question is from Devoted Pupa, who asks, what do you miss least and most from previous Mass Effects?
I miss Quarians a lot. They are some of my favorite. And I miss, oh my gosh, why am I blanking? What's the name of the big bads in the original trilogy?
The Reapers?
Yeah, the Reapers. I miss the Reapers. So we've got like three big mysteries in Andromeda. We've got the Ket, we've got the Remnant, we've got the Scourge. And while I understand the need to set up for sequels, it's really frustrating to come out of the end game and feel like I have almost no answers about any of those three things. And I miss I guess I found the Geth and the Reapers and Husks and sort of that whole storyline maybe a little more interesting or a better mystery that I wanted to unravel. I don't quite feel as invested in unraveling this right now. I'm curious about what's going on, but maybe with a little bit of trepidation because it's all been so predictable so far. Whereas I didn't necessarily feel that way about what happened in the original trilogy. But as we said at the start, it's really sort of dangerous and unfair to do so much comparison to the original trilogy because this is its own thing and we really do only have the one game to work from right now.
Yeah, the danger never felt as immediate, especially like compared to Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
Even 3, like when you're just flying around.
Yeah.
And you stay there too long or you do too much stuff, then the Reapers come and they find you. Like this, there was never any real like sense of urgency. Like I did everything before the quest to find, like to track down the Archon's ship. I completed most of the game before I even did that because I was like, nah, whatever. And also, like, I didn't want to go too far and not be able to do things. But now that I know, like, you've got some time, I wouldn't play it the same way. But, like, I completed, like, every side quest. Like my game is still at 97%, so... I, like, completed, like, everything before doing that whole thing. Like, I never felt like I was in danger or that, like, the planets or the Angara or anybody was in major danger. So, I don't know. I miss that, like, being afraid of the enemy that you're fighting. Like,
yes. Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Yes.
Yeah, like, I never was. I'm like, these guys are almost, like, comical.
Yeah. So. I miss, too, I guess, I don't know, my long-term feelings about companions in BioWare games are difficult for me to establish. right off the bat because, like, it took me a very long time to really feel connected to any of the characters in Inquisition. But I did not feel – there's nobody in my crew that I felt as invested in as I felt in some people from the original trilogy. I like Vetra a lot. I like Drak a lot, but – I don't feel that same level of connection that I like to feel in these kind of games. And that is the kind of thing that may only happen for me with another playthrough or some sort of like introspection or fan fiction or sort of seeing the way that the rest of the community perceives them. Sometimes that does more for me than the actual first playthrough itself.
Yeah, I feel very similarly about the companions. Like, they're good and they're funny, and like I definitely felt a little more endeared to them after, and like seeing all their interactions together. But I mean, I was fully expecting like somebody to die at the end, but like that didn't happen.
The stakes felt bizarrely low for a situation where the stakes are actually incredibly high.
Yeah, like, we could have lost the entire cluster to the Scourge and the Ket.
Yeah.
But it never felt like that would actually happen.
Yeah.
So, I definitely miss, like that sense of urgency, the boss, like, the bad guys actually being scary, and, like, needing to make really important decisions. Like, I found the decisions to be tough, some of them, but none of them really felt like it took my game in another direction.
Agreed. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah, most of the decisions, like, for the first 10 hours or something, any sort of conversation response didn't really do anything besides shape your character.
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes also felt low because, you know, you're the Pathfinder, you're trying to make a new home for people, but your exiles, like, just go out and make a civilization for themselves, no problem.
Right. Yeah.
So it just felt like I really liked the concept of this game and going, you know, across the galaxy and having to find your way through a new place and make a new home. But then it sort of just dipped into the whole, like, cat thing, ancient technology, and it felt a little repetitive, and I didn't feel it really delivered on that original concept for a lot of the game.
Yeah. I guess I also never got a fully realized idea of why you are special. Like, I get that Sam is innovative and I get that Sam enhances your abilities, but I don't think I fully understand why having a Sam is what makes a person a Pathfinder, or like, I don't know. I just, that never quite clicked for me. And the notion that passing on a Sam all of a sudden sort of bequeaths the person with whatever specific set of skills is necessary to be a Pathfinder. Like, none of that felt really well explained to me.
Yeah, especially considering, like, Ryder doesn't know anything about being a Pathfinder.
If it's literally just the ability to interface with Remnant technology, then, like, okay, first of all, that's a really specific thing for Alec Ryder to have, like, had a premonition about back in the Milky Way 600 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
It felt a little shoehorned to me. I will say I do not miss old combat, because old combat was terrible compared to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good one. So one more question we have time for from a Latino lawyer. Would this make an acceptable starting point for playing the series?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, like it is definitely a self-enclosed story. And while there are plenty of references to stuff that happened in the first three Mass Effect games, I don't think that's insurmountable. But it's hard, though, right? Because, like, if somebody asked me, should I play a Mass Effect game, I wouldn't say, yeah, play Andromeda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My first reaction is don't make Andromeda your first Mass Effect game. If I had to pick one, I would say play 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say 2
is like
one.
The perfect game to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of depends on what you're looking for, right? Like, if you're somebody who's more invested in story, like, go back and play 1 if you can deal with it, and then the rest of the trilogy. But if, like, if bad combat is too cumbersome for you and that's going to get in that'll, like, influence your enjoyment of the story to the point that you wouldn't necessarily want to play a game, then maybe play Andromeda, because the combat is legitimately some of the most fun combat I've played in a long time in any game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so we are running very long, as we tend to do when we talk about Mass Effect on this podcast. But does anyone have any final thoughts or recommendations about whether or not to play they want to share before we wrap it up?
I mean, I think definitely play it if you're on the fence. Like, I wasn't sure I was going to get it at launch, and I'm glad that I did, and I had a lot of fun with it. But I can understand the hesitation, or people who feel like it really wasn't for them, or people who don't feel like it lives up to what they would expect from a Mass Effect game. Like, I get that. But also, I'm glad I played it and I had fun doing so.
Yeah. I think there's enough in it that it's still a good game. Like, don't let the reviews sway you too much. I mean, there are some valid criticisms in there, but like,
it's just
yeah,
got
I still
some
had a
big
good time.
Shoes to fill, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and like, I still had a good time playing it. The characters are, for the most part, genuinely likable. The protagonist in particular was fantastic. I loved her. I thought the voice acting was also really great. So I mean, yeah, I would say play it. Like, it was still a good game, and I would say go for it.
Yeah, I would say that with a slight bit more hesitation. I liked the game. I didn't love the game like I did with the original trilogy.
Yeah.
But I would have enjoyed it more, which is something I sort of feel about Dragon Age Inquisition as well, if I had have exercised some more self-control. like, I did find, like, in general, it was a good game, but it was weighed down by a bunch of just garbage quests. So do the main quests, especially the memory sequences, which seem like just a side quest, but those are probably some of the best side quests. Do the companion quest, but leave the rest of it. Like, if someone tells you to go scan some rocks, tell them to shove it. Like,
don't scan the rocks. Don't scan the plants, for the love of God.
I wish someone had told me that. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Zufi, for coming on and talking with us.
Hey, yeah, thank you so much. This is great, especially because I just finished it today, so I like get to have a good decompressed conversation.
Yes. And where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SOEZufi. That's SOETZUFIT.
And Riley?
I'm also on Twitter at Kaleri, KALERI with an underscore, and also on Twitch now, twitch.tv/Kaleri.
Learn some Korean.
Yeah.
And you can find me on Twitter at Josiah underscore, or on YouTube, where my channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. And if you have any feedback, questions, people, or topics you want to hear on future episodes, you can reach out at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _MediaMavens. You can also find us on CartridgeClub.org, where we've got a place to discuss all the episodes. And if you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. And then the last thing is, I started watching the series Power. Oh, why is here? Sorry.
Here my are some TV shows.
I wasn't talking to you. Oh my God.
Here's some TV shows.
Sorry. Okay. Try that again.